And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. With all the attention in the finally ending Obama-Clinton race and all the talk of Obama's pastor, Reverend Wright, and the things that Hillary Clinton said about Bosnia, the Republican is getting a pass. John McCain is carefully going from talk show to talk show and smiling, and, well, he's getting the same generally good press that he's always gotten. Chris Matthews once called the press John McCain's base. But there's more to the John McCain, perhaps, than those of us know. He is called a maverick. He's someone is seen who is fighting the Republican Party, which is particularly useful at a time when George Bush has opinion approval ratings in the 20s. In fact, John McCain has to run away from Bush to be president. He's doing a pretty good job, but there are people out to expose the real John McCain. One person who's done that is author Cliff Schechter, the author of The Real McCain. In fact, Cliff Schechter, this is his second time on The Inside Scoop. He was on in October 2006, and now he's here to talk about his new book. Cliff Schechter, welcome to The Inside Scoop.
Thanks so much. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to talk with you again. There's so many ways.
It's been too long.
It has been. It has been. We have to have you on more than every year and a half. You'll just have to keep writing books. There's so many things about John McCain that I want to go into. Many of us know the basic flip-flops, the flip-flop on taxes, the one about first pushing away Falwell and Robertson and then embracing them. One of the things you expose in your book is some of the more secret, private instances of John McCain's life that people may not know about. And so let's get right to the personal, right to the hot stuff. Tell me about his first wife and what happened with that marriage.
Well, his first wife was the one who took care of the kids while McCain was being imprisoned and tortured in Vietnam.
Right.
And you know, what happened was, it's really sort of almost a really difficult, grisly almost story. He came back from Vietnam finally, and she got into a car accident where she was somewhat disfigured. And he met this, you know, beautiful young beer heiress, in this woman named Cindy Helmsley, who is now Cindy McCain, and he met her at a party at Annapolis, I believe it was, and they started to date, and while he was still married, so he started to have an affair, and eventually he got divorced from his wife, his first wife, and he ended up remarrying only 6 weeks later. So a lot of that obviously raised a lot of eyebrows, as you can imagine, because a lot of people didn't really find that to be the most proper way you would end that kind of a relationship.
Cliff, give us a little bit of the time frame here. John McCain, what was his first wife's name?
For some reason, it is not coming to me.
Okay, I apologize. Didn't mean to do a gotcha there. But okay, so he marries his first wife.
No gotcha to it. I should know it. It's just one of those things.
It's okay. You know. It's in your book. He marries his first wife before he gets sent off to Vietnam, right?
Yes, and then he's...
And so she waits for him. He's in the Hanoi Hilton for years.
For 5 years.
For 5 years. And she doesn't seek a divorce. She doesn't. She's true to him for all those 5 years while he is being, you know, gruesomely tortured. She doesn't go and try to find another man or start a new life. She waits for him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. She was very faithful.
So he comes back, and he's with her how long before she has this horrible accident?
It happens really almost immediately. So
like no more than a month or two or something, and then
yeah.
And then she has this accident, and right. And she's disfigured. She's how long after the disfigurement?
The difficulty, you know, it's not only her appearance, but there's sort of a limp. There's, you know, a lot of difficulties.
Yeah, she has a terrible car accident. So now, how long after that accident does he start dating beer heiress Cindy?
Well, that one is all up to speculation when exactly, but within. What is assumed from reports and from people I've talked to is within about a year or so is when the actual relationship started.
Now, was his first wife hospitalized or kept at home because of her injuries?
Yeah, well, yeah, she was hospitalized certainly right afterward, and then she wasn't kept at home in that she can't do anything, but limited in a way that people often are after accidents. I mean, sort of the kind of injuries where they're not really going out as much together anymore, and socializing as much because of what happened to her.
Now, is his first wife still alive?
Yes, she is.
Has she made any comment on...
I'm sorry?
I'm just curious, has she commented at all since John McCain started seeing Cindy on the side? Has she commented at all about their marriage, about their relationship, shown any anger or frustration?
To her credit, she has not. To her credit, she was asked around the 2000 election, because obviously back then people started talking about this story. And so it kind of came out what had happened, and people were obviously talking about it because McCain was kind of being vetted in the national arena for the first time. And what you had is you had a lot of reporters sort of asking him some very personal questions about it, or asking her some very personal questions about it. And she just kind of said, you know, John was a great guy. She did some sort of very generic terms. You know what I mean? Like, she didn't come
interesting.
Out.
Interesting, yeah. It'll be interesting to me because the religious right will obviously go to McCain because he has pledged to appoint Supreme Court justices that want to end a woman's right to choose and all these, you know, end gay rights and all the things that they support. And yet, they won't even be going against, in all likelihood, they won't be going against Hillary and Bill Clinton. Bill has had his own wayward problems. But right. Against Barack and Michelle Obama, whose marriage, by all accounts, is tight and solid, they're going to be supporting the adulterer over the faithful man, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting about the whole thing. And by the way, it just came to me, thankfully, his first wife's name is Carol. I was having a little bit of a block there, so I apologize.
No problem.
Yeah, they will be. I mean, in McCain, you know, there was an interesting article written by a blogger named Steve Bannon, who writes a blog called The Carpetbagger Report. During the primaries, when you had, you know, Giuliani, McCain, it looked like Newt Gingrich was going to get in, and the question, Fred Thompson, all of whom had affairs, all of whom had left their wives, and the question was,
right.
You know, if it's up against Obama, how can they support this guy? But the reverend, one of these big reverends that supports McCain, Richard Land, said that a lot, you know, at least he was quoted on Fox News as saying that a lot of evangelicals would have a hard time supporting him because of divorce, but because of his military service and the fact that he was with them on, quote, the issues, he expected that most of them would end up going to McCain, certainly over a Barack Obama, and obviously in the Clinton case, you know, you're dealing with the same issue, so...
It's always interesting to me, you know, in the New Testament, Jesus says nothing about homosexuality, but one thing he does decry quite strongly is divorce. You know, what God has put together, let no man put asunder. I mean, it's quite strong that he's against divorce, and yet it seems that despite this basis in longtime Christianity, religious fundamentalists who are supposed to take the Bible literally can deal with adultery, one of the Ten Commandments, and divorce much more than they can deal with something that Jesus never preached against. Let me find out a little bit more about Cindy McCain.
Again and again, you know. I mean, I just want to quickly. I mean,
go ahead.
But you know, you bring up a great point. And I mean, you know, again with these guys. I mean, you know, so John McCain is for the surge and is for sending more troops to die in Iraq in a war that obviously there aren't improvements being made. There is no political reconciliation like he claimed there would be with the surge. And I bring up a very important point because also, of course, many of these guys go around saying they're pro-life. And I apparently, if you're the unborn, they're your greatest advocate, but there are estimates out there right now that at the very least 100,000 innocent Iraqi civilians have died, not to mention 4,000-plus U.S. soldiers and about 30,000-plus who've been maimed and injured. I mean, if you really are pro-life, you know, shouldn't that horrify you? I mean, shouldn't that honestly horrify you?
Oh, no. Only fetuses matter, Cliff.
Right, I know, I'm forgetting.
Only fetuses matter. Once they're born, you're on your own. I mean, you don't want government help. I mean, a baby should get a job.
Exactly.
But fetuses must be protected. I mean, Cliff, I thought you studied this stuff. I thought you knew this stuff.
Factory work is fun, Mark. All of our kids should be doing it. And the heck with that weekend stuff, too. Who the hell came up with that? The unions, of course. 7 days
a
week.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the Sabbath day, I think it's somewhere in the Bible, but, you know, they don't read that part.
I've heard of it somewhere, but it's not in the corporate Bible, and that's the one that matters.
That's true. Let me go on, though, because I want to want to expose a lot of the private stuff that doesn't get out there. We will get to policy. Don't worry. I guarantee you. We got a whole hour. We got plenty of time. We're going to have some people call in. By the way, folks, if you want to join the discussion, it's easy to do. The toll-free number, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. But I want to start with the private stuff because I think it's the stuff that's least known about him. And let me ask you about Cindy McCain. She is a beer heiress. Her father, what did he do? What's the beer? What's the beer that we shouldn't drink? I guess.
Anheuser-Busch. Good.
Anheuser-Busch. So he's what, a CEO there? What did he do there?
Huge company, you know, that distillery and sold it, and so they imported, they sold, they did the whole thing, and he was the biggest. Beer, maybe I should use the word baron, in Arizona.
Beer baron.
That's right. It's like
it has a nice alliteration to it. Sure.
Now there's an episode where Homer becomes a beer baron.
There you go. So this is the Homer Simpson of our time. Now, Cindy, is she like Paris Hilton in that she never got a real job and just sort of, lived off her parents' wealth? Or does she have the... skills apart from that. And it's interesting because Michelle Obama, we see her all the time. We see her in state after state speaking on behalf of her husband. She's even been criticized for some of the things she said. Cindy McCain, maybe she's just deaf mute. I've never heard her speak. Why is that? Why are they hiding her?
Yeah, she doesn't really like to speak at these events. I think they're hiding her because I reported an incident in my book, I'm sure you're going to get to, where McCain used a very...
Oh, I'm getting there.
But I got up for a very point, which is I heard a lot of rumbling on the campaign, you know, when I was doing research, that their marriage is not, you know, it's not as wonderful as it could be. And I didn't write anything and get specific because I don't have anything specific. But I just sense, and this is just an opinion I'm giving, that her heart is not all in it. And she didn't really, she said after that 2000 election, that I know, that she didn't want him to run again back then. So I think that's part of it, that she doesn't really want to be doing it. I think she's more quiet by nature is part of it. But yeah, the answer to your question from before, not like Paris Hilton in that she wasn't seeking the spotlight in the manner in which Paris Hilton was. But like
right.
Paris Hilton, yeah, she didn't really ever do anything. You know, they kind of added her name to the company letterhead. She's the one who owns the corporate jet. She's the one that has the 9 houses in her name. You know, she's the one, all that. But
now explain this. She has 9 houses in their name. It's always interesting because now they're calling Obama, raised by his grandparents and a single mother, elitist. She has 9 homes. What do you need 9 homes for? Okay, you're really rich. You got the main home. Okay, in Arizona, you got a home in Washington. We'll give her 2 vacation homes. She still's got 5 more.
Does she rent them out? That's some of the reason why there's additional speculation, because there's a few places. In Phoenix, for example, right there in Phoenix, they have 3 homes.
3 homes.
2 of them are condos in the same building. So that's obviously caused some of the speculation that they like to spend a little bit of time apart. Then they also...
Oh, well, now, do they live there or do they rent them out?
They don't rent them out. They own them. So, you know, how much time they spend at each one... I mean, I guess they own them. They could rent them out, but they don't. How much time they spend at each one, I can't tell you. But I can tell you that, you know, they all are, you know, ready, willing, and able for them to show up and kick the door in and hang out.
Boy, they have as many homes as Saddam Hussein had. They have as many homes as Saddam Hussein had hiding places. Did John McCain ever, has he ever been asked, why do you have 9 homes?
Not that I'm aware of, no. And I think it is something, I think people have kind of joked about it when he was calling Obama elitist. I was like, you know, I wonder which home he was saying that from. You know, I mean, come on, give me a break. But you've got 2 in the same building, 2 condos in Phoenix, and then in another interesting situation in the San Diego area where one of their daughters, Bridget, lived. That's the one that Karl Rove sneered and called the black love child back in 2000, which you may remember.
She was an adopted child from Bangladesh, right?
Yeah, exactly. So they've got 2 homes there, too, like right, I think within a mile of each other, if my memory serves, in San Diego. So there's a couple fishy things there that people might wonder why necessary to have 2 condos in the same building, 2 homes within a mile of each other. It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Very interesting. Now, of course, marriages can be on the rocks. We certainly know that Bill and Hillary's marriage had its difficulties. But you describe something more than that. You describe, in fact, the single thing that most people quote in your book, and there's a lot of good in your book, and I don't want to say it's all down to this one thing, but the thing most quoted has to do with John McCain's temper and the fact that apparently he called his wife a four-letter word beginning with C and ending in T. Now, that is an extreme allegation you're making, and it's one that, let's face it, most people, if they were to use such harsh, unforgiving language, would do so in private. Did you speak to people who said they overheard this?
Yes, I did, and I did make that for a point because, you know, I'm not someone who sits there and digs constantly through the personal lives of Republicans. I mean, when stuff comes out, I joke about it as much as anybody because I find them to be such hypocrites on many of these issues. I don't go searching, but I did go to Arizona, you know, for about 10, 12 days. I'm trying to, a year ago, about June, when I was working on the book, and then to talk to people that knew McCain. McCain's people wouldn't talk to me, obviously, so to talk to people that had run-ins with him, who knew him, and that kind of thing. And three reporters told me exactly the same story to the exact same details. And that's why I'm telling you right now, I guess I have to say this almost in a defensive way, although I shouldn't have to. I think there was something called Watergate that was broken by anonymous sources, if I remember correctly. There are a number of things much worse than what I reported that I heard. But I heard it from a source that wasn't credible or a few sources that didn't have any details, so I didn't report it. On this one, literally down to the detail, I heard the exact
same. Tell us the detail.
Three reporters.
Give us the full detail, Cliff.
The full detail is this, that they were on. John McCain was running for re-election to the Senate. He was elected to the House in 1982, to the Senate for the first time to take over Barry Goldwater's seat in 86. So he was running for re-election in 92. He's traveling around on a small bus, maybe the earlier version of the, quote, Straight Talk Express, and he's there with aides and reporters and his wife and John McCain. And at one point, Cindy reaches over and playfully starts twirling his hair and makes a joke that probably many of us sadly have heard from our wives, which is, you're getting a little bit thin up there, John, you know, and she's joking. What I heard, the exact same account from three people, again, is McCain literally turned his head towards her, turned his face towards her. His face turned red. He looked like he was going to burst. A lot of people said snap was the word I got also. And just said, at least I don't plaster on the makeup like a trollop, you. There you go, a word that starts with C and ends with T. A word that rhymes with hunt. And a word
like
that,
a
again,
trollop, you, C word.
Yes, as you said, if I ever said that to my wife, I'd be sleeping under a bridge somewhere right now, if I weren't beaten to death. And I think I deserve it. And if you said that in public,
and apparently he said so in front of reporters?
Yeah, and aides, male aides of his, who were sitting there too, which makes it, I mean, so a bunch of men were sitting there. Not to say that it's a nice thing to say in front of a woman, but that's what I mean. There's so many layers.
Well, Cliff, answer me this. Now, I'm going to be skeptical here. If he said it in front of reporters, why do you need anonymous sources? Why can't the reporter who heard it go on the record and say so?
Well, because the problem is, and I can give you many examples of this, but my book goes into an example of two different people, one who was a very well-respected defense analyst, another a guy named Winslow Wheeler, another the former president of Common Cause, Shelley Pingree. In both cases, they disagreed with McCain on things, and he went after them in such a vicious way and smeared them and tried to get them both fired. He succeeded with Winslow Wheeler. He did not succeed with Shelley Pingree. Any criticism of McCain is personal. When a reporter around 2000, and I can't remember her name, wrote a critical story about McCain, who was on the bus with him then, from the Arizona Republic, he refused to speak to the paper for a couple of years. So this is, you know, he's got a pattern of doing this kind of stuff, and I know, because I've been on the receiving end of it, a major paper in, you know, I can actually send you the email, would be happy to do so, Mark, but another reporter who's scared of this, who works for a major newspaper in England, and was writing a story on me in my book, the McCain people called her and threatened her and called me all sorts of names, smeared me, said I was unstable and a liar and all sorts of things, so that she didn't end up writing the story. So my point to you is, this is McCain's modus operandi, and if you read these stories out there about him and his clashes with his own people, we're talking Senators Domenici, Cornyn, Grassley, where he's used four-letter words, told them to go F themselves and things like that. Strom Thurmond, who was in his 90s, he made physical contact with and knocked on his butt. These things have been reported by other sources.
Of course, Strom Thurmond probably deserved it, but I get your point.
Well, I do it to Strom Thurmond, too, but I guess I'm just trying to... to form a pattern of behavior. The guy, let me finish one more thing. The guy I told you about, Winslow Wheeler, the defense analyst, who was working for Pete Domenici and had worked for mostly Republicans, Senators Javits and Kassebaum, he's a guy who said to me, you know, McCain, we came after him in such a personal and nasty way that he said every American should be scared of John McCain controlling the IRS, the CIA, and the FBI. So I guess my point to you is, with all of that, everything I've just told you for how McCain treats his own people, if you're a reporter and you're thinking of reporting a story like the one I just told you, you don't, because you're scared you're going to lose your job, because that's what he does to people. And
now, has Winslow done the national tour? I mean, has Winslow gone on, people won't talk to him, but has he been invited to do the national tour, to be on, the various news channels and so forth, to give his story?
He hasn't yet, that I'm aware of, but I know, I mean, when he was fired, he gave very public accounts to, the Baltimore Sun at the time, and I'm pretty sure a few other publications, and I didn't break new ground there. I just reported something that was underreported. You know, he's attached.
Let me ask you this. The comment that that you say in your book that he said to his wife Cindy McCain seems such an over just a huge up response to what was. I mean, she's exactly, she's kidding around with him. You're going a little bald. That's something that and it seems like such a strong, vivid, nasty reaction. But you're saying this is common. It's not just this one incident with his wife.
No, I mean, that's the thing, is that I broke another story, which the McCain people originally denied when they were smearing me on Fox News, which was that he physically attacked Congressman Rick Renzi because...
Yeah, how about that? What happened there?
Because that story helps sort of back up what I'm trying to say, too, and corroborate it, which is, just to give you an idea of who the believable person is here, me or McCain, who's denying it, let me give you three. This is a second. I'll give you the third story quickly, which I've already alluded to. So this story on Rick Renzi that I broke was that they're in an Arizona GOP delegation meeting, and McCain likes to refer to people in a very sort of demeaning way and call them boy. So especially younger people, which is almost everybody these days, right? So he.
Good thing he has no African Americans working for him, or there'd be a real scandal.
Yeah, there.
We'll
really,
get to
I
that.
Hope he doesn't refer to Obama that way in a debate.
Yeah, there you go. That would be the end of his campaign. I kind of hope he does say it, but go ahead.
So he said this to both Trent Franks, who is a young Republican congressman, and Rick Renzi. Rick Renzi's kind of a former linebacker, I believe, for ASU, but one of the schools out there, and big guy. And he kind of stood up and he said, "You'd better stop calling me that, or I'm going to kick your you-know-what." McCain responded by lunging at him and throwing punches, and they had to be pulled off of each other. Well, I got that from reporters, too. Anonymously, and McCain originally said that I was making it up, and I was a trash journalist and such. Well, after they said that, after they denied it on Fox News, apparently more of the information came to light and more sources started speaking about it, because then the Washington Post did a story on McCain's temper. They asked him about the Renzi story, and then they went back on what they said and said, yes, something did happen. Not exactly as Cliff said it did, but something did happen. So they wouldn't admit. Now they're just trying to say, oh, well, it wasn't exactly like Cliff said, but it did.
Yeah,
so
in other words, you got only 99% of the story right, Cliff, but the word he said was go F yourself hard instead of go F yourself, and so therefore it wasn't exactly as you said it.
Exactly,
those are very
exactly.
Useful code words.
That's my point, and that's what I'm trying to say with the C T story, the four-letter word story with his wife, which is they're denying it, but people need to ask themselves what the credibility of the McCain people are. There's this story on Renzi, and the third story I told you about where he tried to get Shelley Pingree fired from Common Cause. Here he's supposed to be working with her on campaign finance reform. She wanted to push for full public financing. He wanted to push, this is the mid, about 4 or 5 years ago, mid-2000s, he wants to push for just banning 527s, which, by the way, the Swift Vote Veterans for Truth, groups like that, he now takes money from all these guys to the tune of $600,000 from people that funded them. So apparently he's not...
Wait, hold on. The same people that funded the Swift boats that John McCain's taking money from?
Yes. So
what are their names?
527 so much anymore. That's a little aside that we can get into, but I wanted to make that point. But back to the main story, which was he was saying that 527s needed to be banned. Shelley disagreed with him, so he went and he started lobbying Republican board members at Common Cause, smearing her, saying that she was a Democratic operative because she had run as a Democrat, but she was working in a nonpartisan capacity at that time. And he said, oh, she's meeting secretly and plotting with Democrats and all sorts of other ridiculousness. And he even called funders and had people call funders and try to get her fired. Well, he, of course, said I was smearing him on that, too. He also denied that and said I was lying. But, not only has Shelley Pingree come forward and corroborated my account, but so has another independent analyst, Mark Schmidt, who is a scholar at the New America Foundation, who came out and wrote in a piece on his blog there that, yes, that I'm a named source, and that will come out and say that everything Cliff is saying is right. So far...
Well, Cliff, here's the thing, though, but the press image of John McCain, I mean, there was the Washington Post article on his temper, there is your book, there are a few rumblings in the wilderness, but generally, I mean, do you agree with Chris Matthews when he says the press is John McCain's base? The press, here is this heroic story of a man who went through torture in a North Korean prison and survived, even though he even condemned America at one point. I don't blame him. If I were tortured, I would too.
Sure.
But he's treated as this huge hero. And is the idea that therefore justifies everything he does in his future life? Is it really all about his biography that causes the press to like him so much?
Well, that's a huge part of it. You've got a lot of it right there that others don't seem to grasp, which is, a lot of people, particularly men, but I think people in general, are sort of, can't imagine going through what McCain went through and sort of are so in awe of him because of it that he gets a free pass and everything else, and the press is not immune to that. So that's where it started. It started with McCain's life story of what he went through in service to this country, which I don't question in one, at any point there. But what happened is there's two other parts to it. The second part to it is McCain realized that bio was so powerful. So he sort of went back and grabbed this emotional kind of a bit from history, the kind of the image of Teddy Roosevelt, the reforming kind of crusader, the straight-talking guy who wouldn't put up with any lip from anybody else, who was out there in the terrain, taking on the elements. And he kind of pushed that image, and the press has just eaten it up because of his bio. So he very smartly, his people realized that he had this sort of credibility because of his war record, and they pushed that, and that really helped. They helped push that image because he'd get up and make big speeches, whether it's on Meet the Press or on the floor of the Senate, to kind of back up, that he's a straight talker and all that. And the third element, it kind of came out and was reported about a month or two ago that he had this big barbecue at the ranch, at one of his nine houses, this ranch in Sedona, Arizona, for the press. So he also works them nonstop. So these temper issues you hear about, for the most part, haven't occurred with press. They have in some cases, but for the most part, those are with colleagues of his, people he disagrees with on the, whether in the Senate or, operatives or activists. But when it comes to the press, he gives them access. He does the whole backslapping thing like Bush.
Now, Cliff, in 2000, John McCain was very famous for his Straight Talk Express. That was the bus, and again, it seemed that the reporters always paid homage to it. Was he on the same Straight Talk Express in 2008 and 2007? Is he just as willing as he was 8 years ago to give access to reporters, to tell them little stories off the record, or has he gotten a little more cagey now that he's the Republican nominee?
Well, he's definitely gotten more cagey, but he still has the veneer of access. Because of the kind of, how tough it is, you're right there in Washington, for reporters to ever go back on conventional wisdom once it's been established.
That's
so
true.
Because of what he built up over the years, but particularly in 2000, the image that he was granted, he can get away with a lot more. So in sort of plain view, he can lose his temper with an aide of his, or he can go back on something he said. As you brought up earlier, he can say, in 2001, he can stand up and say that Bush's tax cuts are budget busters and, that they're disproportionately for the wealthy, and now he can argue for making them permanent. Or in 1999, he can give interviews to CNN and the San Francisco Chronicle and claim that Roe versus Wade should not be overturned under any circumstances because it'll force women to dangerous operations. But now he can call for putting more Alitos on the court and for doing that exact thing, overturning Roe versus Wade. Heck, he can go on a show, two different TV shows, Chris Matthews, Hardball and George Stephanopoulos this week. On one of them, he can start off the show saying he's in favor of gay marriage. By the end of the show, say he's against it because an aide whispered in his ear. And on George Stephanopoulos' show, say 1 minute when George says, are you against civil unions? Say no. And then a minute later when he says, are you for them? Say no. And then get away with that kind of thing. And that's something that if you didn't have this image, if Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or anybody else did that, they'd be taking the task for it. But he
he's an old doddering man. He can't remember what he's supposed to say moment to moment. Cliff, come on. You know how it is with people with Alzheimer's.
Maybe that's it. But no, I mean, you know, he does this with everything. He's the guy that tried to pass a bill, you know, about a decade ago to ban lobbyists from working on campaigns. Now he's got 115 of them. You know, who either
not only does he have 115 of them, but on the front page of the Washington Post today, they talk about his main guy, his leading political operative, the guy running his campaign, Charles Black, and all the many dictators that Charles Black has lobbied for. Dictators,
and
Equatorial Guinea, Marcos in the Philippines, and then it mentions Equatorial Guinea and Kenya and Nigeria and Zaire, you know, places that are, for several, Equatorial Guinea is considered one of the most repressive nations by Freedom House, a long history of human rights violations. I mean, just each and every one in Zaire, President Mobutu Sese Seko, according to the State Department, it tortures his detainees, you know, steals billions of dollars. And yet Charles Black has represented them all. He's done so unapologetically. What is his connection to the McCain campaign?
Well, he's just one of many. So, you know, and yes, he's one of the top, he's their top media guy and one of the top two people on the campaign. But he's also a power broker in GOP circles. He's been a lobbyist, as you point out, for years, for all sorts of just unbelievably disgusting interests, foreign interests, every domestic interest you can imagine.
And let's not forget the Tobacco Institute, because I for one, am always against whatever big tobacco is for. So I just have to throw them in.
It's usually a safe position to take, Mark.
Because I know some smokers, but I won't name names on this show. Anyway, go ahead.
Very kind of you. He's in Republican very powerful circles. He was a Bush guy in 2000, you know. So he's a great link for them, to the Bush people. But, you know, another guy who had just stepped down, his national finance chairman, Tom Loeffler, a former congressman, lobbied for Saudi Arabia, and in between 2005 and 2006 made more money, his firm, from the Saudi government than anybody was paid by any foreign government, and any firm was, $7.9 million, $12 million plus overall the last few years. And he was lobbying for Saudi Arabia as we were trying to find out what, you know, if those 15 of those 19 hijackers on 9/11 that came from Saudi Arabia had any help. All the elites that we know sent money to bin Laden's organization, what role they played, how involved they were, what they knew, and Saudi Arabia would not cooperate. This guy's lobbying for Saudi Arabia. Another top guy, Peter.
And now, hold on. What's his name? Wait, the guy that lobbied for Saudi Arabia, they got $12 million. What's his name?
Tom Loeffler, he was the national finance co-chairman.
The national finance co-chairman for John McCain. Now, John McCain, there was an article, again, in the Post, actually in the New York Times, a few months ago that caused a great stir, mostly because of the allegation of adultery, probably even more than the lobbyist stuff. But there you had a strong relationship between John McCain and a lobbyist. Whether or not it was personal, I don't know. I don't know if you know. But the heart of the story, apart from the personal stuff, was that based on this relationship, he went against Arizona interests and actually lobbied for one of her clients. What's the story there?
Well, the story there is they had the lobbying part right. Whether they had the personal relationship right, I don't know, and I don't even really care. I mean, to me, the important part is that it just is part of a pattern. She was flying around with McCain on corporate jets, which was the same thing that was going on with Charles Keating. She was getting him to write letters to regulators like he did in a number of markets, including a Pittsburgh market, advocating for a cable company, Paxson Communications, one of our clients, so they'd be allowed to own two cable stations there, because as you know, which wasn't allowed, because as you know, we don't have any sort of problems with media consolidation.
he wants more media consolidation.
Exactly, so that will benefit us more. We have six companies, you know, it's like that own almost everything. We should have two. You see the same pattern emerge as you see happen from the Keating incident, which he said he learned so much from.
Well, let's talk about the Keating incident, because this is something that, if they're going to swift boat Obama's pastor, we need to talk about the Keating Five. This is where John McCain was caught, not just doing it, but caught basically in a bribery scandal. What's the details there?
Yeah, well, the details are he received hundreds of thousands of dollars. I believe it's over $200,000 in contributions overall. Keating family members and family members, company members, all sorts of stuff like that. And what he was doing was flying on Keating's corporate jet around the country, but even better yet, to his home in the Bahamas. And not only was the McCain family, but when they needed the babysitter flown there, she was flown too. Because remember, John McCain is not an elitist; Obama is. And while this was going on, McCain is writing letters to regulators because Keating owns a savings and loan company, and he's writing.
And Keating's
letters.
Basically the guy that got McCain his start in politics, right? He funded his first campaigns.
A lot of the funding came from Keating, yes, because Keating had a lot of interest in the Phoenix area, and so
Keating gets McCain elected, and in return, McCain writes
McCain writes federal regulators that regulate these savings and loan companies to say that they should be deregulated so they can make riskier investments and risk the people that invest in them a lot more.
So, dear regulators, please lay off Keating's savings and loans. Let him do what he wants. And,
exactly.
Oh, by the way, a few years later, there's a bailout that costs hundreds of billions of dollars to the American taxpayer because they did leave him alone.
On many levels, people get screwed. The people that invest in this company lose everything. And in the end, a lot of them...
And even those of us that didn't invest lose a lot because we have to pay for the bailout.
Exactly. The next level is those of us who didn't invest, who are just taxpayers, who end up paying for this ridiculous bailout for this company because of what McCain did. And beyond the fact that the money he received, his wife also, Cindy, because that's how he knew Keating, was because of the close family connection, his wife, Cindy, and her father also invest in this series of shopping malls with Keating. So you've got a personal business interest involved in all of this, too.
Did they do well?
Yes.
Did they make money on it?
Yes, they did.
They did do well. Hey, that's better than the Clintons. The Clintons lost money in Whitewater. Apparently, though, Cindy did well with Keating. Let me ask you, because there's so many things to talk about. I do want to give out the phone number again to see if our listeners want to join in. Many of them are just enjoying my discussion with you, which is just fine. But if you have a question for Cliff Schechter, it's easy to call in. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. There's so many things to talk about. One thing I want to focus on, because I think that it is, well, explosive, is his connection with, let's face it, white supremacists or racists. Tell me, who is Richard Quinn, and what is his connection to John McCain?
Well, Richard Quinn is a political operative based in South Carolina. He used to write, I haven't seen any recent writings, so I'm going to say used to write, for a magazine called Southern Partisan Magazine. Which is a neo-Confederate magazine that often argues what used to be known as the Great Lost Cause, which is Southern slavery and the South's independence before the War of Northern Aggression.
Okay, so he's still supporting the Confederacy. It's 143 years after the war, but he's not done yet.
No, he's not done. There's they'll rise up yet.
Okay.
So he's writing for a magazine that openly editing and writing for a magazine that had such articles written as slavery was good for African Americans, Abraham Lincoln was the greatest traitor in U.S. history, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mammy had a great old time, and, you know, Lincoln trying to get rid of Southern property, trying to take the slaves without compensation, that's just a...
Exactly.
Anyway, okay, we got who he is. What's his connection to John McCain?
No respect there. It's like a Rodney Dangerfield thing. So what happens is he's writing and working for them. Also, important to note that he publicly proclaimed that a hero of his, a guy he called a maverick, in fact, like much like John McCain's known as a maverick, was a guy by the name of David Duke. And another thing that he did.
So Quinn is a big Duke fan.
Yeah, this guy Quinn's a big Duke fan. He also sells T-shirts mocking the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Because
okay.
That's pretty funny.
Clear. It's clear. Quinn is a racist neo-Confederate who hates Lincoln and loves slavery in the South. Fine. You know, lots of crazies out there. What does he have to do with John McCain?
John McCain hires him as a campaign operative, and as far as I can tell from records I can see, he still is one. So he has been.
Well, he's working for McCain now?
Yeah, still is. Unless they can show me.
Has nobody checked his past?
I mean, this stuff is all out there. It's in the public domain. Again, I didn't break these stories. I got them, you know, this is secondhand. I reported them from other publications. So,
you know, this has got to come out, I would think, more in the mainstream media. I mean, here is a guy, John McCain. He opposed the Martin Luther King Day holiday, right, for decades.
Yep.
He flip-flopped on the South Carolina flag.
Yep. It's important to note, Mark, that he opposed it. He opposed the Martin Luther King Day holiday in 83 when they first were voting on it, and he opposed it 4 years later when the governor, Republican governor of Arizona, was working to overturn a state law they had passed to respect it. He advocated and supported the governor in overturning. So that's
so, wait. Arizona passed a law respecting the holiday, and he sought to overturn that law after it was already passed?
Yes.
Okay, so, I just want to get that straight. Now, in South Carolina...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's confusing. First, he was against the Confederate flag, and then he was for it, and then he was against it, and then he accused himself of political pandering. It's all very confusing. Sort it out for us, Cliff.
Well, you got that very right.
He
initially said that it was a symbol of slavery, but then he realized his advisors told him he was going to lose South Carolina after he had won New Hampshire and thumped Bush there in 2000. So he went down, changed his position, said it was a states' rights issue, and that it went in a couple days, it went from being a symbol of slavery to a symbol of heritage. Because remember, John McCain doesn't flip-flop at all.
Right.
And then after the election was over, he admitted that it was pure political pandering. But when John McCain does something like that, he always acts like it's the exception. I did it this one time, but I never would do it otherwise. So he actually came out and admitted that, yes, it was for completely political reasons.
As I recall, the press praised him for his honesty. It's like, hi, I was dishonest. Wow, that was very honest of you to admit your dishonesty. What a great, great man you are. I mean, that's basically how the press dealt with it, right?
Yes, it is. So when you look at his position on Martin Luther King holiday, on the Confederate flag, on this guy Richard Quinn, who, again, I've looked everywhere I can look, and obviously not all these records are as public as one wants them to be, but as far as I can tell, he's still a consultant for McCain after all of this, 8 years later. So
Let's look at some more flip-flops.
When a guy advocates for David Duke, I don't know what else you can say besides he's a white supremacist.
Well, clearly Quinn's a white supremacist. The amazing thing is that McCain hasn't kicked him out on his ear yet. I would think he will eventually when enough people complain. But one group he will not kick out on his ear for certain is the religious fundamentalists. He, of course, called them agents of intolerance, Robertson and Falwell, 8 years ago, and then within 6 years after that was already speaking at Liberty University before Falwell died. And apparently he still is connected with Robertson. He hasn't disavowed Robertson at all?
He hasn't, and he never disavowed Falwell. Remember, everybody made a big deal over Jeremiah Wright saying some things that supposedly were anti-American. Well, Jerry Falwell, after 9/11, blamed Americans for 9/11 because we forsaken.
Yes, he did. I believe he blamed pagans, feminists, lesbians,
people for the American way, the ACLU, variety
right.
of others.
I think it was pagans. You know, I mean, that was really what it was. There's so many pagans in America that are going around, supporting paganism that clearly they caused 9/11. But
that's interesting because I would have gone with the ACLU because I figure if you advocate civil liberties and the Constitution, there must be something bad about you.
Well, clearly, yes, because you wouldn't want any of that commie Constitution defending there. But one pastor who he has kind of rejected now, to be fair, Cliff, I mean, he sort of stopped the endorsement of, and then he sort of kind of rejected, I don't know, is Pastor Hagee. That seems to be a very complex relationship.
Actually, that just broke today, but you know what it took for him to reject? Remember, Hagee's someone who called the Catholic Church the great whore. Made many statements like that, has made many brilliantly anti-gay statements and others, and that wasn't enough for McCain to reject him. What led to McCain to reject him is he did one of the few things that you can't do in American politics, which is say anything positive about Adolf Hitler. And finally,
Hagee said something positive. Oh, yeah, Hagee's belief, I believe, was that the Holocaust was punishment for Jewish sins. I think.
Yeah, it was God.
Right?
It was sort of a twofer. It was a punishment for Jews' idolatry and rejection of Christ. But more recently, was that it came out that there was a sermon Hagee did, I believe in the mid-90s, where he said that Hitler actually carried out God's plan because God needed hunters out there. He used the word hunters in quotes, which are the Nazis, to go around and kill the Jews so that the rest of them would move back to Israel, because as we all know, the Armageddon can't come, the rapture can't come, where Jews go to hell and the rest of us go to hell, except for believing Christians, until the Jews are in Israel. That's their belief. So in that way,
right,
he was fulfilling God's will. And that was
so
the one...
finally then he deserted Hagee after all of that.
They took all of that, yes.
Okay, well, I hope that people mention that as much as they mention Reverend Wright. Now, John McCain's own religion, interestingly enough, is also something that's not clear. I mean, at least Obama, for all the 17% of the people in West Virginia or Kentucky that think he's a Muslim, more of them know that he is at Trinity United Church of Christ and condemn him for his pastor there, Reverend Wright. But at least it's pretty clear, you know, Obama's religious background has been discussed, I think, more than any presidential candidate since John F. Kennedy, and other than Kennedy, probably no other candidate in American history. And yet John McCain's religious background, John McCain's background is almost never discussed, and apparently it's confused. Is he Episcopalian? Is he Baptist? Explain.
He's confused, because as far as everybody can tell, he's Episcopalian, but he's claimed that he's a Baptist, and no one can seem to figure out where that comes from. He did that.
Well, give us the details there.
I'm sorry?
Give us the details. When did he claim to be Baptist? What you know, what's going on here?
What's going on is that, you know, he, just to give a background on it, he's always been an Episcopalian. His family's Episcopalian. But when he was seeking Falwell support, as well as others, so this was probably about a year ago, he was going around to a number of different Baptist churches. That was where he was trying to kind of get himself, you know, to get a lead in the primaries and get the social conservatives behind him. And he went, and in a couple of different Baptist churches said that he actually was a Baptist. And nobody really knows where that came from. Because
he's not a member of any Baptist church, is he, to our knowledge?
None that I've been able to find, and none that anybody else is aware of. So,
well, he's a Baptist in Baptist churches. He's an Episcopalian in Episcopalian churches. I'm sure he'll go with Joe Lieberman somewhere and say he's Jewish.
That's right.
Well, one thing I do question, though.
I'm sure he can go to Utah and claim Mormonism, too.
Absolutely. Why not? Why not be everything to all people? One of the things that my listener, there's a chat room where they talk about the show, and Lemon asks whether Cindy's hiding of her tax returns, whether it's because of investments in Keating, what do you think is the reason why Cindy McCain will not release her tax returns? And do you think she ever will?
I don't think she will, and I think there's going to be a whole number of controversial things in there. It came out about a week ago that McCain was talking about how, you know, one of the things, he was giving this fantasy preview of what life would be like in 2013 after a McCain administration. You know, Bin Laden would be dead or caught, as if we hadn't heard that before. The war in Iraq.
Yeah, I do believe catch him dead or alive. Some other presidents said that.
Yeah, I can't.
Yeah, I think around the time that the mission was accomplished and all our troops were brought home from Iraq, that's why Iraq is such a glorious democracy today, and everyone holds hands and sings Kumbaya. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, that's a good segue you have there, because that was his second claim, was that the war in Iraq would be over because we won, mission accomplished. I don't know what "won" in quotes means to him. But that was, you know, that was something else. And so at the time he was giving this fantasy, you know, of what would the future be like. You know, Darfur also, we would have gone and taken care of that and stopped the genocide and stopped all genocide.
Right.
The problem is that Cindy owned stock, that in, you know, in companies that the Sudanese government, were running. So,
Well, now, but let me ask you this. I remember during the Obama-Clinton campaign, there was a huge ruckus, mostly press-driven. I mean, I think Obama campaign mentioned it briefly, but really it was press-driven, that Hillary Clinton has to give her tax returns, and most importantly, Bill Clinton has to turn over their tax returns. And the drumbeat went on and on and on. Hillary Clinton said, "Hey, I'm in the middle, I'm running, you know, I don't have time to get all this tax stuff done for you." But they did it, and it showed, lo and behold, to no one's surprise, both Bill and Clinton, Hillary Clinton, earned a lot of money in speaking fees all over the world. But now, of course, Hillary, I don't think, will be the Democratic nominee. I think that's pretty safe to say. And yet no one is pressing Cindy McCain on her tax returns? What's going on here?
And she's just flatly said she's not going to turn them over. And I would say to you, you know, you asked me about the history of Cindy earlier, and we got off on a different track, but I was going to tell you when I was talking about the beer distributorship that the way that they got into that originally was that her grandfather was a bootlegger, much like Joe Kennedy was during...
Interesting.
So... So there's that history there, and I'm guessing that there's a lot of shady dealings, because when people are bootleggers, they tend to have a few unsavory ties, let's say, with mobsters. So I think that there's shady things in there. I think I would be willing to promise you that there are investments in companies that had business before McCain's Senate Commerce Committee.
And you really think that he's going to get through all the way to November and she will never release her tax returns? You don't think there's going to be a drumbeat to do so by assuming Obama's the nominee, the Democratic Party, Howard Dean, ordinary voters, the press? You don't think there'll be a huge drumbeat? What's she hiding?
But I suspect that if there's stuff that's bad enough in there, they're just going to ignore it and not release them, because they may feel like the damage. I mean, there's a couple-day story on her investments in the Sudan. I'm guessing that with all these lobbyists he has on there that represent foreign dictators, I'd be willing to bet you that she ends up that she has investments in a lot of places like that. A lot of companies that have polluted. He's now trying to pretend to be an environmentalist. I'd be willing to bet you she's got investments in all sorts of polluters, investments in all sorts of people, telecoms with business before the Commerce Committee that are involved in the warrantless wiretapping. I think it would go on forever.
It's interesting, Cliff. I don't know of – it would be interesting to do the research. I doubt you've done it. I'm not saying you should have. But it would be interesting if someone would do the research. I don't believe there's a president in modern times that hasn't disclosed his tax return and those of his spouse. Usually they're jointly filed. I think you'd have to go back pretty far in American history before the question was even asked.
It seems like a worthy project and one that maybe I'll undertake because it's –
something actually shouldn't be that hard for you to do, Cliff. I'll give you your next assignment. Go back, find every nominee for president. Just keep going back. I'm sure, Clinton and Dole did it. I'm sure Gore did it. I'm sure Kerry did. You just keep going back and back and back and find the last presidential nominee that didn't disclose his and his spouse's tax returns. I would suspect you'd have to go all the way back to, pre-FDR, before anyone even asked the question.
I was thinking 1920s. I'm guessing
that's what I was thinking. Maybe 1920s, because after all, the income tax that just came in at the turn of the 20th century. It'd be interesting to see if John McCain's wife is the only spouse of a candidate not to do it. Of course, in the early days, they didn't really notice the spouse's finances at all because they were considered part of the husband's. I do want to get we only got a few minutes left, and I do want to go a little bit to policy. We've talked a lot about his personal corruption ties to lobbyists, his flip-flops, and so forth. But, of course, John McCain is running on his strength. He is running on he's going to finish the Iraq War. He's going to win the Iraq War. He is strong. Obama is willing to talk to these vicious enemies of ours. He won't even talk to them. He'll just conquer them. And yet he seems to be a little bit confused about even who the enemies are. Sunni, Shia, Muslims, he mixes them up. What's going on here? Is he purposely mixing these up for some reason, or is he just confused?
I think he doesn't really understand it or care to understand it. So I think it's in a way, it's ignorance is bliss. He's ignorant about it, but he realizes that it's good to be ignorant about it. So why bother to learn?
Why is it good to be ignorant about who America's enemies are?
Right. Well, a perfect example is the other day when it was pointed out to him that Ahmadinejad in Iran was actually not the guy that made foreign policy for the country. It was
right. It's Khamenei, it's the spiritual leader.
Khamenei, who makes policy there, his response was, oh, well, I don't think most Americans know the difference anyhow. So, see, that's what I think.
So if most Americans don't know the difference, then the president doesn't have to know the difference?
I guess that should have been
George Bush's answer when asked who the Pakistani leader was in the election of 2000. When they said, who is he? George Bush should have said, instead of, I don't know, he should have said, most Americans don't know, so I don't have to know.
Right. But to me, that's a window into McCain's soul, which is, his belief, I think, with Sunni and Shia is the same thing, and he mixes them up so readily. You know, it'd be like saying that Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland are best friends.
And of course,
in Iraq are killing each other. So to say that Iran would be training Al Qaeda, who are Sunnis, when Iran is Shia, is absolutely
right. One of the things that America has never really understood is that the Shia and the Sunni had a nice little balance of power there. That's why during the Iran-Iraq War, neither country won, though a million people died, and that our huge Sunni enemy, Al-Qaeda, and our huge Shia enemy, Iran, hate each other more than they hate us. They both hate us, but they hate each other more.
In fact, the Taliban took over, and it's something that's important. When the Taliban took over in Afghanistan, who are Sunni, and that's where Al-Qaeda got a lot of support from, and many Al-Qaeda members came from their ranks. When they took over, one of the earlier things they did was to execute the entire Iranian mission there in Herat. So,
interesting.
So, you know, these are not people that like, and obviously people know about the battles they're fighting among each other in Iraq right now. So to mix them up and not understand them and question Barack Obama on this stuff, when you don't even know who makes foreign policy in Iran, you don't know who Sunni and Shia are, you don't know any of this stuff, and say, but you're going to do a better job in foreign policy, should be laughable if the media would cover it properly.
And it's not just foreign policy, of course, it's domestic. He made a quote on the economy that I assume is going to be in Democratic attack ads from now until November. If you have the direct quote in front of you, if not, I'll get it.
Yeah, it said I don't really understand the economy. I don't have it in front of me, but I don't really understand.
Oh, here it is. Actually, I got it. I'm quoting from your book. There's two quotes, actually. In November 2005, he told the Wall Street Journal, quote, "I'm going to be honest. I know a lot less about economics than I do about military and foreign policy issues. I still need to be educated." That is November 2005. And then in December 2007, this is just 5 months ago, was he educated? Well, here's what he said. Quote, "The issue of economics is not something I've understood as well as I should," unquote. So, okay.
And he has a pattern of this, Mark. I want to get in.
You got to give him credit for being honest, for saying he's an ignoramus.
But I mean,
right?
I think on things that are so basic, I think he uses that as an out because he had no way of explaining how he was going to balance the budget and make George Bush's tax cuts he once opposed permanent because it's an impossibility. And I give you the example of abstinence and whether it causes AIDS, whether AIDS could be prevented by condoms or abstinence. He was asked this question on the campaign, refused to answer and claimed he didn't really know that, you know, he kept saying, well, we have a policy paper on that, don't we? We've got something somewhere. Where's Coburn's paper? You know, that's Tom Coburn, who's a very right-wing senator who says that only abstinence prevents it. But, I mean, if you could be a senator or a congressman now for 26 years and not know that condoms help prevent AIDS, you'd have to really be so stupid as to maybe not be able to read My Pet Goat. So,
well, I don't know. Dr. Frist, our former Senate Majority Leader, apparently could diagnose Terri Schiavo simply by looking at her by video camera, and he said at one point that tears cause AIDS because
right,
that satisfied his right-wing opponent.
They're pandering. I mean, Frist obviously
right.
knew the answer. Coburn knows the answer, and so does McCain.
Right.
They're pandering to these right-wing elements. So I guess what I'm saying to you is I don't really think it's true that he doesn't know so much about the economy. Common sense tells you can't keep cutting taxes forever and keep spending and balance the budget. He just doesn't want to have to answer an impossible, give an impossible answer to a question he can't answer.
But it's interesting because, I mean, when he says he doesn't know anything about economics, you know, I don't know whether he expects that Americans will say, okay, you don't have to know anything about economics. Hell, I don't know anything about economics, so it's okay if my president doesn't know anything about economics. Or whether they actually will say, maybe we want a president who understands the economy. I mean, in running against the elitist Barack Obama, who went to Harvard and Ivy League schools, is he saying this as a plus? That, hey, you know, we don't want any of them, I mean, silly economist, smart people there.
Well,
you know, I'm a man of the people. I know nothing.
Right. In a way, it is. It's a Bushian type appeal to anti-intellectualism. But in a way, again, it's the ignorance is bliss thing that I was saying with the Sunni and Shia, with whether condoms prevent AIDS. It's an easy way of really just not having to answer the question because any answer you give is going to offend a certain number of people that might support you. So it's easier just to say you don't really know the answer and move away from it. And that's what I think he's doing in all of those cases. Because if
Cliff
he said condoms help prevent AIDS, he'd lose all the fundamentalists. You know?
Absolutely.
So it's easier just to say, I don't know the answer.
I'll tell you, it's been a fascinating interview. This will be archived, of course, on RadioInsideScoop.com and on the Head On Radio Network. The name of his book is The Real McCain, Why Conservatives Don't Trust Him and Why Independents Shouldn't. There's a link to it.